just one, if this one single reason is really the reason, then people are going to be real happy. Ooh, gimme. And he was oh so very right. Since the day I watched that video, his one reason has become my not-so-secret weapon. The reason? Circulating energy. And what the heck does that mean, you might ask? Circulating energy is intentionally changing things up to clear out stagnant energy and allow space for new, wild, exciting, rewarding energy. Circulating energy is doing things differently, shaking up routines and patterns so that our cells can release energy that have become stale. When we circulate energy, we invite the newness into our lives that's been unsuccessfully trying to make its way to us. Out with the old, in with the new. I started working in all different spots all over my house, my office, the lounge room, the kitchen bench, and even outside on the days my laptop wouldn't overheat in the Arizona heat. On the days that I chose to sit at my round table in our great room, I rotated my seat so that each day was a different view. Some days I got out of my house and started doing work in a new cafe, and when it came to writing, that work I'd previously been plugging away at, I started to give myself some flexibility and forgiveness, which is exactly what landed me here, in this cafe in San Antonio, writing these words that will surely become the content for a chapter in my book. I was beginning to witness how the power of circulating energy was critical for my creativity. But it wasn't just critical for my creativity, it was critical to every single thing in my life. I started seeing all the areas in my life where I felt stagnant, bored, and stuck. One of them was my tried and true morning routine. Wake up, have probiotics, meditate, journal, work out, sit down in the same spot as yesterday, open Google Docs, write, scroll Instagram for a bit, continue writing. Lately, I was just going through the motions, but it was beginning to feel boring, and I was becoming attached with no place for newness. Solution? I started waking up and doing something different every day. I would draw if I felt like it. I would dance on most mornings because that is when I felt my energy really circulate. I would write in different places and use different colored pens. Seriously, it can be that minute. Writing with a different colored pen, it truly is the smallest things we can do that are new to us that help us circulate energy. I stopped just walking to the fridge and I started dancing my way to the fridge. Why had I been walking my way to the fridge my entire life? Boring. What newness could I invite into my life if I changed even the most normal, ingrained habits I had? Two-stepping while I was brushing my teeth? There's another one. Standing while brushing was so 1988 to 2016. Oh, and my calendar. My calendar was full of so much same. It was time to rearrange things. I started working out smack dab in the middle of the day. I went for walks in the morning. I left my bed, my room, to go and read. It was all so simple, but so wildly exciting to find ways to switch up my own normal day. As my energy changed and felt so much more free, open, and exciting, new stuff started showing up. It became addictive, circulating energy. I stopped wearing my workout clothes every damn day. Working from home has its perks, but I was just dressing by default. There I was with a wardrobe full of clothes, yet I was wearing the same yoga pants, Genius tee, and hair scrunchie top knot every damn day. Time to wear the clothes I'd never worn, just because. I felt refreshed. Paying more attention to my clothes led to something else that shifted my energy level. I have always given away my clothes in bundles because I just love the feeling of minimalism and giving. But I was reaching a whole new level. I realized that every single thing in my home had its own energy, even my clothes. So if there was something sitting around that was not getting used or giving me any joy or excitement, it was time for it to go. I felt I had space for so many surprises to show up, and of course, they did. I was addicted. Create new structure. Circulating energy has professional advantages too. I changed the structure of my programs to give them a new invigoration. Obviously, I don't do this too often, just when my tribe needed me to, when my energy started to border on the verge of stagnant. And I changed my mentoring style so that my tribe was also experiencing the circulation of energy just like I was. It was infectious. Even my travel schedule was contributing to this positive shift. I realized how truly alive I feel when I land in a new city, my energy goes wild. I feel instantly refreshed, just like now when I'm in San Antonio, Texas, writing, working on this book. I've been all over the world, but I've never been here. Admittedly, San Antonio is not my style of city, but it's new to me, and that newness is moving my energy around and inviting in new thoughts, new perceptions, new ideas, new insights, just so much new. Circulating energy is why I feel so giddy in London. There is just so much going on, so many funky little cafes to visit, parks to sit in. There are so many dynamics present in one city, so many cultures, so many different energies, so much to do. The fact that I walk everywhere when I'm in London too, that circulates energy like sitting in a car does not. I love the newness everywhere in London. When I was there just recently, my tribe commented, "Whoa, your energy, you're just so giddy." I can't tell you how many new ideas and downloads came to me while in London. I made a note to visit new cities even more regularly, purely for this reason. So now, you shake it. Look around and you will see so many opportunities to circulate your energy, personally and professionally. Every day we can do this, whether it's on a micro scale like dancing when you get up in the morning to release and circulate any energy we stored overnight, or whether it's moving to a new home, a new city, a new job because you need a big shift. It does not matter how we circulate energy, it simply matters that we do. And we must do this over and over and over again. Yes, routine is important. Routine has its place, absolutely. Without routine, my mum would have had a hell of a time raising four children close in age, who all played an average of five different sports each. But I've come to learn that routine is not the most important. Circulating energy is. Make that part of your routine. If we want to attract newness into our lives in any way, then we need to become masters of circulating energy. Changing things up, shaking up ourselves. When we invite newness into our field, stagnant energy moves and our life force turns on. Getting stuck just thinking about where to circulate your energy in your life? Try to change a few things with me. Just shake it up. You'll get addicted. Change your outfit. Do you have a default outfit? See what happens if you let your soul choose your outfit today. Cropped Michael Jackson tee with high-waisted jeans on a Tuesday? You go, Glen Coco. Can't because work requires your duds? Wear some crazy, sexy underwear. Recreate your workspace. Work in a new space every day or every week. Somewhere new in your house, somewhere new in your hood, or if you're in an office, do something different with it. Buy a plant or a bubblegum machine. Get wild. Laptop screensaver? What do you look at every day? Surprise yourself. Change your password. Whoa. Switch up your schedule. Don't do the same thing at the same time every day. Rejig your morning routine so that there's something new, spicy, exciting in there. And repeat. Dance, do a headstand, walk your dog in a different direction. Get rid of what you don't need. There's nothing that says, "Give me new energies," like physically getting rid of old ones. Go through your home and give away anything that doesn't bring you joy in each room. Clothes you've had for yonks, do not throw out the vintage though. That shit is gold. Gifts from people whose energy isn't what you want to bring into your life, don't feel bad. Let go of all that stuff that is taking up space and bringing no new juju into your world. Find a new workout. If you walk in the morning, try yoga, Pilates, or a 20-minute HIIT sesh. If you usually work out at lunchtime, try working out in the morning. If you never walk, try walking. If you never swim, try swimming. Shake up your evenings. If you watch Suits every single evening without fail, turn the TV off, read a few nights, learn a language, play guitar, go for a walk, call your friends. Don't be a regular. If you're like me, when you find a good thing, you stick to it. Now we're in Sydney and I have my fave new Bondi hangs and I go to them all of the time. But just last week I said to my hubs, "Okay, next week we're going to try two new places." Sure, I don't like to risk a shitty meal, but it's worth the risk for some new, delightful energies. Meals you eat and when. Do you have soup on Sundays, spaghetti on Tuesdays, Postmates or Deliveroo on Wednesdays, out on Thursdays, pizza on Fridays, burgers on Saturdays, and repeat? Change it up. Go out on a Monday, have soup on a Thursday, take lunch some days, eat a new breakfast once a week, be a little frisky. Shuffle the apps around your phone. I know. Really, PK? Yes, really. Make it a little treasure hunt on your phone so that you don't automatically click on the blue Facebook icon without thinking about it at 8:07 a.m. every day and 150 more times after that. Circulating energy is a magical tool, and it's not just a tool we can have. It's a tool we need to have in order to keep attracting the new and evolved experiences and people and opportunities and feelings. We are our own solution to our stuckness, and when we can circulate new energy as a daily habit, newness falls in love with us, and we're forever open to expanding delights. Circulating new energy doesn't have to be huge. It can be in the smallest things, like how you move to your fridge, how you brush your teeth, what underwear you wear, how you do your hair, what time you read, your morning routine, the plates you eat from. It's all new. Go forth and let the magic in. Play. I get my clarity so much faster when it's fun. Last year, and all my years before last, I would never have been described as someone who knows how to play, and I definitely didn't dance my way to my fridge. I was quite serious, the get-it-done type of woman, always on some sort of mission. It's been like this since I was a little girl. Once in primary school, I got a report back, and the teacher had written, "Peter is intelligent and bright. Her grades are great, but her sense of humor is so dry. Sometimes I don't understand her." Well, that has summed me up quite perfectly. I've carried this mentality with me into adulthood. And although I've traveled the world and had my fair share of benders, I was never fully able to relax. And I rarely would say that I was having fun. Sounds crazy. Actually, it was very crazy. But now here I am, age 28, and writing to tell you that play is not a distraction from the important stuff. Play is the important stuff. And understanding play has profoundly changed my life. Before I begin to explain why and how to add play to our lives, I'm going to share something that's super sacred to me. I'm going to share a story that is quite taboo and talk about a subject that's often easier to just shut up about. But here we go anyway. A disclaimer. I'm not prescribing or suggesting you do anything by sharing this story. I'm sharing it because it's authentic for me to do so. Last year, I sat for my first ayahuasca ceremony, and it was one of the most profound experiences of my life, says everyone ever. But seriously, it was. I know. Truth is, I had been called to this ancient Amazonian plant medicine for a couple of years. I'd been invited by my more spiritual friends, one after the other, and each time they shared their experiences with me, I was more intrigued. It felt almost like ayahuasca was sending smoke signals to me through different people. What I knew was that ayahuasca, or aya, allows you to access more than just what your five senses show you, which enables you to go beyond your normal thought patterns. You begin to see beyond your sight, to see what she wants to show you, what you need to see. But more importantly, what you need to understand and feel. It's like an installation, an upgrade. But my time was in 2016. And as soon as I made the decision to go to the mountains and commit to the ceremony, the spirit of ayahuasca started working through me immediately. Ayahuasca is both a sacred plant medicine and a spirit that I now know to be divinely feminine, beautifully powerful, and boundlessly loving. Everyone has different experiences, and I'm not here to write a whole chapter on ayahuasca herself. I'm here to show you that my ayah, what we'll call this divine feminine and also loving energy, experience was particularly profound when it comes to play. The entire month before I sat in the mountains with Aya, she began slowing me down, lightening me up, and loosening my reins. I just felt like I was moving slower, like my nervous system was unwinding. Then came the evening I sat with Aya. It was magical, my God. I was with my soul sister, Mackenzie, Mackenzie's aunt Amy, and her partner, Mish. We all sat with a shaman whose energy was that of pure divinity. I could not contain my excitement. The first 90 minutes of the ceremony, Aya simply taught me to breathe. I remember thinking, "I know how to breathe. Let's get to the good stuff." To which Aya responded, "No, you don't. And we're not moving on until you really breathe." I remember lying down, breathing, and having her widen my breath as if it was as wide as the Pacific Ocean. It was like she was showing me how much replenishment I could feel with just one real breath. She showed me what my breath looked like when I breathed, like really breathed. How big and wide and healing my breath could be. Every inhalation wasn't just about me filling up my lungs. It was about getting in sync with the universe and everyone in it, and being instantly reminded of what mattered and what didn't. Every breath made me feel like I was breathing with the whole world. An hour and a half of just breathing, and I fell in love. I fell in love with breathing, and I finally understood why I needed to breathe more deeply. Eventually, when I looked up at the wall in front of me, I saw the word relax. Of course. And only once I started breathing properly did she let me move on to her next real lesson or gift for me. Once Aya had shown me my breath, then the real work could begin. Play. Her whole purpose was to introduce me to the importance of play, but she couldn't do that until I was able to slow down, breathe, and relax. Only then could I be one with the high vibration of play. This was more than a lesson. This was instant embodiment. I started downloading crazy, wild, colorful images, lively animations of what play actually looked and felt like. I wasn't just being shown. I was being gifted play, like a piece of software being installed in my cells. I was in a 5D playground. Everything was colored in a way I had never seen, colors that I didn't even know existed. There were swings everywhere, rides. It was what I imagined Disneyland times a billion to look like. I wasn't hungry, thirsty, yearning, impatient, scared, or jealous. I felt only one vibration. Play. I sat there with tears streaming down my face. So grateful to be in that spot, right there, in my life, to be shown this so vividly and viscerally, what it was to play. I felt like a new program was being inserted in my cells, and an old rusty one was being taken out. Play was in, and worry was out. I was swimming in the vibration of play, and it was embedding itself into my cells. I remember having tears streaming down my face because I just felt like I was being given the greatest gift, while simultaneously dissolving my stupid worries that up until that point had consumed me. I started to not only know how powerful it was for me to lighten up, loosen up, laugh, and smile, but I was learning how to embody the vibration of play for the first time ever at the age of 28. We must all make play a priority. At least, that's what Aya was telling me. When I got home, I started dancing for no reason. I started enjoying my workouts and only moving my body in ways that felt good to me. I dropped dragging myself to do weight circuits that just had me throwing weights around like a chimpanzee until the 40 to 60 minutes was up. I started doing Pilates and walking, moving at a pace which allowed me to actually notice my body and enjoy movement. I started cutting projects out of my agenda so that I had more room to breathe. I'd never felt so deeply calm and relaxed, yet here I was still getting all of my work done. All month long, I felt so good, so different, so in harmony, and so, okay, this is how it's meant to be. This was when I finally stopped missing the point. It was one of the most profound months of my entire life. My mum used to call me Paranoid Pete, because I've always had a wild imagination, but for a lot of my life, I used it to worry. I'd worry as if it was my job. I'd worry even when I didn't have anything to worry about. You know, just always doing my job. If worrying paid a by-the-minute salary, I'd have been as rich as the Sultan of Brunei. I thought that because I wanted to change the world, I needed to worry about everyone and everything, all of the time. I'd create imaginary scenarios in my head and think about them over and over again until I believed I had real cause to worry about them. I was teaching people about success and freedom and designing their own life from the inside out, but here I was, old Paranoid Pete, not really nailing this freedom on the inside thing. I couldn't relax. I couldn't turn off. I was charging at a million miles an hour, acting as if I needed to carry the weight of all of the galaxies in a backpack on my shoulders all day every day. I look back, and my nervous system was so tired. During Aya, my nervous system unraveled from its tight bind of 28 years, and I was giving new cellular space to play and to breathe. Paranoid Pete was gone. Playful Peter was in. There are many people out there, some who have sat with Aya, others who have not, who call this a trip. But I'm here to tell you that I was acutely conscious throughout my entire journey, and therefore, instead of calling it a trip, I see my experience as insight. a crystal clear showing of what I couldn't see before through the noise and clouds of everyday life. I didn't know it was okay to breathe until now. I didn't know it was okay to play until now. I didn't know how much I needed to learn how to do both until now. On that playground, I saw genius, my vision, my boss, my chief entity, the company I was working for, everywhere. And genius kept telling me the same thing. Peter, teach your entire generation this. They need to play urgently. In the morning as we were leaving, I asked the shaman if he wanted my help packing up. He looked me in the eyes and said, Peter, it's your job now to relax and have fun. Now, if that wasn't the bow that was tied around the most magical gift in the world, I don't know what is. I went home with a renewed sense of purpose, which felt a hell of a lot better than mobilizing the next generation of conscious leaders. Rather than strategize and mobilize, I was here to help us all lighten up and loosen up. Personal growth and creativity and conscious enterprise and leadership and saving the planet can be so damn serious, and our generation needs to do something much different than the generations before us if we are going to change that. Time to play. Play is the way back home, the way to our innocent, worry-free, blissful inner child that isn't endlessly distracted by life, but playing the game of life as it was intended. Play is the fastest way I know to cut through all the shitty vibrations we collect throughout a normal day of hashtag adulting and rise up to a vibration that is where our soul is hanging out. Play is how we clear toxic residue from our cells that's been accumulating from every Facebook scroll, every horrific news story, every long day on our computer, copying damaging electromagnetic field left, right, and center. Play is how we clear out the crap and jump on an energetic escalator that takes us straight to clarity. Do you ever feel shittier after you dance? Breaking a leg table dancing does not count. Do you ever feel shittier after you take a step back from the computer and go and dunk a few hoops? We do so, so much work to get back to our vibe when things go south or when we feel in a funk that we have tricked ourselves into thinking that any kind of play is a distraction from our deepest work. Play is our deepest work. For me, play has the ability to cut through any of my low vibrations and the power to restore and rejuvenate and realign me. Play can do that for anyone. Play is one of the most powerful ways to heal our planet, and it is part of my purpose to take play out of the immature, distraction, and what's the point boxes and place it back into the box where it belongs. Absolutely necessary. Your turn. When you think of the word play, what do you see? Do you see color, a new vintage outfit, and one of those dope Technicolor Reebok tracksuits from the 90s? Dancing in the middle of the day, a playground, skateboarding, riding a razor scooter even at age 30, I do. Splatter painting, wearing costumes to the movies, baking in the kitchen, being on holiday and waking up at 10 a.m. to a cocktail, rearranging flowers, chasing children around playing tag. This is where you take a look at your life and see where you can add more play. Making time for play is not just an add-on that we should do if we have time. Play can be how we do things. It can be laced through everything we do. Our email signature, our work, what we wear, how we move around the house, the music we listen to on our drives, how we cook and bake, how we decorate our homes, our conversations. Play is a vibration that we can choose at any time of day. Here are some questions to help you get grooving. What does play look, feel, and taste like to you? What are some things you do that make you feel playful? How can you weave play throughout your day? How can you add more play into your week? How can you do something super playful this year? And a spicy one. After you play, do you usually feel more clear or less clear? We must consider play as some of our deepest and most important work. This is not just a tool, but a reminder that hardly anything that we really worry about matters. You can stop doing absolutely anything you don't enjoy and shift to teach, work, create, and live in a way that never ever moves play away from the top of your priorities list. So, homie, when you're asked to write your goals, please have play as number one. Write it into your spirit routine, tattoo it on your notebook, or yourself, unable to ever be unimportant. I saw home during my Aya ceremony, And more importantly, I saw the relevance of that amount of joy on our earth right now. I experienced, saw, and now know play. Play shifts your vibe, elevates your spirit, and takes you home. Play is not just an activity, it's a vibration. It's healing, invigorating, rejuvenating, and one of the most spiritual acts of all. Play does not mean to ignore your adult responsibilities, but it means to not ignore your number one responsibility of all, your vibration. The magic question, how does it get any better than this? There's this question that my mentor V has asked me multiple times a month for the last 4 years. It's changed my world. My God, I wish I could articulate to you, to all of you, my fellow millennials, to all people everywhere, how powerful this question has been for me. I ask it in all situations. It's constructive. I ask it when I'm stuck, when I'm in a tough spot. It's also expansive, so I ask it when I'm so over the moon about something that all I want to do is dance. You know those times that things feel so good that you're equal parts grateful, but also looking over your shoulder to keep an eye out for that thing that's going to wreck it? I ask this question then. When it comes to constructive versus expansive, my work has shown me that it's the expansive bit that's most important. It's what I used to struggle with and with which I see many young people struggle. As soon as our wildest dreams manifest in reality, our old stories kick in. There you are spinning, arms wide open, and a little voice is warning you. Enjoy this, because there is no going up from here. This is as good as it gets. These thoughts flip a switch, and soon you begin to worry that things could get worse, that this joy will peter out. You begin to claw back. Why get that excited in the first place, right? At some point, the other shoe will drop. All good things come to an end, as the cliche goes. Don't claw back. Joy is a skill. Humans are able to feel such a great amount of joy. I'm talking that natural, euphoric high of happiness. But many times, humans do not allow themselves to be in that joy, to experience it, to live it. At least not for very long. Soon, it's all about the noise, the stories, the misery of others, and all the external factors that lead to the feelings of joy being replaced by guilt or fear or something else that is not joy. We are now at the point where we have to convince ourselves that we deserve our happiness, and we work really hard at that. Even so, in comes that joy, and it ends up feeling wrong, as if we don't deserve to be that happy. This is self-sabotage, and it's a bad habit that many millennials, really all humans, have acquired. When you feel like everything is working out perfectly and you're expanding into somewhere new, that's when self-sabotage kicks in. You justify your actions, you explain your feelings, you defend your joy. But here is the truth. Joy is your home. Expansiveness is your state. There is no need to explain, justify, or defend yourself. Instead of the sabotage, the best action is to ask the magic question. How does it get any better than this? With this question, you will invite in more of all that is good. You will invite in more love, more success, more abundance, and more happiness and joy. You'll keep yourself on your super highway to alignment and in your flowing tap. I can think of times in my life where everything has just been so rad. You know, days full of sunshine, everything I'm working on is so fun, no obligations on my calendar. I'm cooking new foods, feeling spacious in my mornings. Everything is simple and enjoyable, and there's nothing to worry about. Ah, the simple things are the most joyful. So I'd pause in the morning to sit in gratitude for all the good, and my mind would start to reel. Okay, well, what about the next 3 months coming up? You know, you've got lots of flights coming up. This project is going to require you to work your ass off for way longer each day. Have you answered all of your emails from last week? What are you going to say to Deb about next Thursday night? Is the bookkeeper still coming over on Wednesday? Shit, I've got a call at that time. And then, just like that, I'm out of my joy and feeling anxious. It can be that swift. And now, when I've been feeling all the good feels, I go up to my little Zen room and intentionally and purposefully ask, how does it get any better than this? I sit quietly with the question, letting my mind and my heart explore. How does it get any better than this? I'll tell Source, the universe, that I want to know and see the answers to that question. How does it get any better than this? Later on, I'll notice that the emails that land in my inbox are pleasantly surprising. I'll get invited to collaborate with conscious leaders I've been following on Instagram. And my hubs books a surprise weekend away for us. It's getting better. It's getting better all the time if we allow it, if we ask for it. The universe will answer any question you ask, so be mindful of which questions you are asking. Why me? Why is this happening? What was this person thinking? How did I get here? What did I do to deserve this? You'll just be asked to dive deeper into those situations, and the frustrations and fears will grow. How does it get any better than this? Make "how does it get any better than this" your go-to question. For all the times, for when things are great, for when things are just cruising, for when things are ugh, for when things are so freaking epic you can't even handle it. When you ask yourself this question, you will leave no room for self-sabotage and only invite room for expansion. Calling it the magic question might feel a little woo-woo voodoo for you, but the truth is that it's a very intentional and purposeful question. It puts you in the driver's seat and reminds you that you are leading your life. You get to choose, consciously expand or subconsciously sabotage. Watch things get better than this, or stick with this, because this is, fine, good enough, right? You decide. Step into the magic. The answer's in the question. Bob Seger. Magic questions can be a thing. Make them one. The answer's in the question. What is the question you want the answer to? Ask the right question and you'll get the answer you're looking for. Here are a few questions to get you started. Where are the solutions I'm not seeing? What does 100% clarity feel like? What could I do with just 5% more courage? Who and what can contribute to this project? Where are their resources making their way to me? What are my choices here? What energy do I want to be in? What are the possibilities for this? The universe happily makes infinite goodness, love, alignment, success, abundance, and joy available to you. Most people never think to ask for it. Instead, they think they can stop at a certain place because of XYZ crazy reason that humans come up with to fight for their limits. Explore your infinity. Let the universe wow you and ask, how does it get any better than this? Ask it 10 times. Ask it while looking up at the sky or while closing your eyes. Ask intently. Ask purposefully. Then let it get even better than this. I dare you. This is just another reminder to have the hardcover book too, because there's so many amazing drawings in it, if I do say so myself, that help to illustrate the points. Section 2, leading. Lead yourself, lead your tribe, be led by your vision. Then, together let's lead the world. True belonging is the spiritual practice of believing in and belonging to yourself so deeply that you can share your most authentic self with the world and find sacredness in both being a part of something and standing alone in the wilderness. True belonging doesn't require you to change who you are. It requires you to be who you are. Brené Brown. Courageously leading is the element of the new way that is all about how we lead ourselves by being human as fuck, how we lead ourselves by being radically honest, how we let ourselves be led by our vision to do important work, and how we together lead the world by going high when everything seems to go low. Permission to screw up. Leading is not only for lightworkers, leading you. When I think of what is really required of our generation, it's simple, to be the new superheroes, which is what this book's all about. Originally, I had the word lightworker written in place of superheroes, but I scratched that. Lightworker felt too limiting. To be a superhero, you don't need to be a kundalini yogi or wear crystals around your neck or read from the deck of spirit animal cards by your laptop, or know which star system you came from. You don't even need to know what a chakra is. Feel some relief? I mean, you can be and do those things, but they are not required of a new superhero. The new superhero is the adventurer, the rap lover, the tattoo-obsessed, the eclectic introvert, the new mum, the self-educated, the formally educated, the yoga lover, the yoga hater, the doting dad, the surfer, the crappy speller, and you, reading this book. The new superhero is a leader of a new kind. Whether you consider yourself a leader or not, you are a leader. There are so many ways to lead. Leading is not limited to the person at the front of the room, the prime minister, the president, the CEO, or the captain of the team. Leading is choosing your alignment, following your own divine intolerance of what doesn't sit right, and navigating a big and scary vision. You are leading your own life. You are leading even when you don't know you are leading, and that is where we begin. So, can we lighten up on the word leader and just learn what it means to lead? First, you must learn how to lead you. Once you lead you, then you will lead others. Once you lead others, then all together we are able to lead the world, the collective, the generations here and to come. And to lead you, you must first and foremost learn how to lead from a place of radical alignment. When you choose to lead from alignment, you've got to be willing to flex. What is true for you this year might not be true for you next year. What is rewarding for you today might not be rewarding for you next week. You must always lead from a place of impeccability and integrity. And the highest form of impeccability is honoring your humanness. And the highest form of integrity is honoring your alignment. Impeccability. Impeccability is a word that gets used a lot when it comes to leadership. When I think of the word impeccable, I think clean as a whistle. No dirt, no mess, no mold, just squeaky clean. Cleaner than the plate you eat off. Impeccable also happens to be one of Don Miguel Ruiz's 4 agreements. It's the first one. Be impeccable with your word. Speak with integrity. Say only what you mean. Avoid using the word to speak against yourself or to gossip about others. Use the power of your word in the direction of truth and love. That's a quote from the 4 agreements. It's the one that I know I have tried to practice ever since reading his book, The 4 Agreements, many years ago. It makes sense, right? Speak words in private that you'd be comfortable having people hear in public? I agree. Nobody likes the two-faced Tommy. However, being impeccable with your word is one thing. Being impeccable with yourself is another. Being impeccable with your word means that you won't speak about Todd when he's not around differently than you'd speak to him when he is. Being impeccable with yourself means only doing and saying what is true for you, even if it doesn't appear squeaky clean by other people's standards. Your truth is more beneficial to the world than acting as if you were born wearing mala beads with no party history, no mistakes, no destructive relationships, no fuck bombs. You are human. You are clean and you are dirty. And we, the collective, want to see you as both. Because that's what makes you glorious. We want to see your mistakes, your struggles. We want to know what you've learned from your dirty past. There is the 2017 story of Tiger Woods getting pulled over for a DUI with a most horrendous photo attached. My God, I cringed when I saw it. His eyes are puffy, he looks half asleep, and yeah, he also looks high. He later pleads guilty to reckless driving, and tests revealed that he had 5 drugs in his system, a cocktail of mood enhancers, sleeping pills, and painkillers. The internet was busy making memes using that most unflattering photo, while Tiger was at an obvious low point, having to share it with the entire world. He's a person, a dad, a guy kids look up to, a pro. Yet, famous as he may be, his responsibility above and before all of those things is being a freaking human. I wish he could have silenced the whole world with this kind of statement. Hey world, yeah, I fucked up, but guess what? I'm human. I'm clearly going through some tough times right now, so I could use your prayers more than I could use your memes. Tiger could have given the world a gift. He could have opened up, revealed himself, and been brutally honest about the low point in his life. I think he actually may have to some degree. Sure, it's not his responsibility to please the public when he's going through shit, but radical honesty so often warrants compassion. I find it so beautiful when people show their humanity. It makes me feel more bonded and connected to them. I just want to hug people so tight when they admit stuff, when they apologize, when they ask for help. It's like when their walls come down, the magnet in their heart pulls my heart in. They remind me of how vulnerable we are. They inspire me to own all parts of myself and to choose, here I am, love me anyway, over shame. If we can share our story with someone who responds with empathy and understanding, shame can't survive. Brené Brown. Impeccability is being radically honest and authentic about our humanness and revealing that to the world. Not a hyped up, squeaky clean, more appealing version. Both when it's easy and when it's not. Impeccability is unconditional transparency. It's when we are honest about the good, the bad, and the ugly, no matter who our audience is. Impeccability is you leading you. Integrity. Integrity, as most of us understand it, is to do what you say you'll do and to live in alignment with your beliefs and values. What it doesn't mean is to live a perfect life without any contradictions. Like impeccability, integrity is necessary for radical honesty and alignment. Integrity is being okay with the fact that we may change our mind, that our beliefs might change, that we might change our course of action. I'm here to tell you that you have the permission to pause, stop, and even quit with the most honest explanation there is. I changed my mind. Sometimes we are so obsessed with being seen as committed and in integrity that we ignore the fact that our truth is changing, when, in fact, the height of integrity is being able to say, I just don't believe in that anymore, even after 20 years of preaching it. To live in alignment, we don't need to make up bullshit excuses and spend a week beating around the bush trying to find the words to say the simple four words that we really want to say. I changed my mind. Changing your mind doesn't mean that you are any less impeccable or have less integrity. It does not mean you have to share every single breakdown or be less committed. Changing your mind is simply you choosing to lead your own life. Here are some other high integrity statements. I don't feel good following through with this project, even though we're so close to a return on investment. I'm no longer excited about this, even though it was my everything for the last 5 years. I actually agree with him now, even though I used to hate his guts for the last year. Integrity is you leading you. Impeccability and integrity are two buzzwords when it comes to leadership. But if you're not careful, they can take you away from your greatest commitment, our alignment. Impeccability doesn't mean being squeaky clean and having no dirt in your life. It means being radically honest and only doing and saying what is true for you, no matter what. Integrity doesn't mean believing the same thing forever because you believed it once. Your highest form of integrity is honoring your alignment, even when it means you may surprisingly change your mind. Success 2.0. There is no top leading you. Time macho isn't cool anymore. Time macho, the term I first heard used by Arianna Huffington in her book Thrive. I fell in love with it because so many people are time macho. I used to be. I was just so damn proud that I worked 16-hour days. I would run this story in my head that I didn't have time for anyone, and before long, it became true. Whenever a friend would invite me to do something during the day, I'd respond with, I can't, I'm working, accompanied by a little smart-ass tone and a face that read, what on earth would make you think I wasn't busy? I was almost offended that someone could think I had any free time. Can you relate? Why would I have free time when I have work to do? My mind starts spinning. I am a hard worker and I take pride in being a hard worker. You should work more like me. That was my attitude. I started to notice that it became my script, my story. I never had time for anything but work. I'd go to family dinners, but I still had that nagging feeling. So I'd say, I have to check and see if I have calls. I would completely shun my friends and others building the same business as me when they'd suggest we could do lunch. What do you mean? Why aren't you working? I was really, really proud of my work ethic and I couldn't let it go. Time macho had become my identity. I was the perfect example of what success looked like out there. Speaking on big stages, traveling the world, doing all the successful kind of things, going for more, more, more. Until the never-ending pursuit for more started to wear thin. It started to become irrelevant. I was helping others have a freedom that I wasn't allowing myself. People stopped inviting me places. I was missing the point because there wasn't an income I could reach, a number I could hit, a stage I could speak on that would ever make me feel more successful than my alignment with my soul could. I had to drop the never-ending, misaligned pursuit for more. I no longer wanted to feel like I could never stop and smell the roses, or feel like I couldn't take a day off to freaking breathe or bake or turn my phone off. I wanted to save my generation from this endless pursuit for the top, from being so time macho. I had to go deeper. So I decided to take a success holiday. During the first few weeks of not giving a fuck about success, as it was so defined, I felt like I actually was on holiday. Like I had just pulled myself out of a marathon I'd been running in without even realizing it. I looked at my schedule and got ruthlessly honest with myself. I asked myself some questions. What during my week feels like crap to me? What have I committed to in pursuit of success out there and not success in here? What needs to change for me to feel fulfilled and at peace tonight? And yeah, I even got deep. If I was to only have a year left to live, which of this would feel worthless to me? If I was to only have a year to live, what would I want to start doing right now? It all changed. I was still putting in a lot of hours during the day to create epic shit, but they were my hours that I'd chosen, and they were being spent on new and exciting things and not, ugh, that commitment. They weren't 'cause I had to hours. They weren't 'cause that's what successful people do, hours. They were 'cause it feels good, hours. When my head hit the pillow each night, I felt different. Each night, I felt like I was celebrating another beautiful choice-filled day on earth, rather than going to sleep just so I could fast forward to the next one and get more shit done. I felt incomparable. I felt incomparable because my greatest measure of success wasn't comparable to my peers or to my mentors. As long as I did what my soul wanted to do, I was nailing each day. And I didn't have to prove, defend, or justify this to anyone. There was no ranking system, no top 25 entrepreneurs list I could make that would have me feeling more successful than me fist bumping my soul as my head hit the pillow each night, as if to say, we chose for us today. In a world as beautifully ripe for success and accomplishment as ours, people are doing more than ever right now. Even though people are doing more than ever right now and becoming more successful than ever right now, they're not feeling any better. In fact, they're feeling worse, which is why the old model of success is so over. Yes, sing it with me. Over! But we can't just throw out success altogether. We have to redefine it, homie. So tell me, how do you feel about these three current definitions of success? Three which pop up right away on Google. Success, the accomplishment of an aim or purpose. Success, the attainment of popularity or profit. Success, a person or thing that achieves desired aims or attains prosperity. Accomplishments, attainments, and achievements are the big words we use to define and describe success. These words drive the current models of success, models which are currently driving everyone on earth right now into the ground. Humans are exhausting themselves in the endless pursuit for more. But before we throw out the old and bring in the new, let's question these definitions. Let's see how we feel. Success, the accomplishment of an aim or purpose. Okay, cool, but what if it doesn't feel good? Success, the attainment of popularity or profit. Okay, cool, P. Diddy. But what if it doesn't feel good? Success, a person or thing that achieves desired aims or attains prosperity. Okay, cool, Moneybags. But what if it doesn't feel good? Success wasn't wrong before. It's just changed. Everything changes. That's evolution. So we've got to press pause and collectively let out a big hold up, which will give us some time to redefine success for future generations. Because the old model of success of go to school, get a degree, get a good job, get a mortgage, start a family, feels so ancient now. Our generation has very quickly interrupted that advice with our divine intolerance for systems, and we've started to mold our own version of success, which involves a whole lot more freedom, creativity, travel, and sometimes a big old flip of the bird to a mortgage and student debt. Why would we bust our balls so we can get a job that we don't enjoy, so we can bust our balls to pay off the years of school where we busted our balls, so that we can buy a house we can't afford and keep busting our balls to pay off said house so we can start a family and then keep busting our balls to support them? We are doing so much ball busting that we have no time to spend with our family. And that's success? That doesn't make any sense to us. There is more to defining success these days. Success that doesn't feel good isn't success. We have evolved to a new kind of success, and its measurements and vital signs are something that Forbes 500 can't measure. Success 2.0, the state at which you and your soul fist bump each night when your head hits the pillow, recognizes that success means your soul is the deciding factor when it comes to a win or a no win, not the bank, not the client, not the boss, not the book, not even your parents. You're either smiling, feeling fulfilled, aligned, fabulous, success 2.0, or you plunk down and feel like bleh, just going through the motions of gotta get up and do it all over again. You don't have to look far to find the memes on the internet to support this, like the one by Charles Bukowski that I've seen reposted a jillion times. How in the hell could a man enjoy being awakened at 8:30 a.m. by an alarm clock, leap out of bed, dress, force feed, shit, piss, brush teeth and hair, and fight traffic to get to a place where essentially you made lots of money for someone else and were asked to be grateful for the opportunity to do so? That's Charles Bukowski. Success is feeling free, feeling good. There is something else rising, a new revolution, and it's been building in the last 5 years. I know you are aware of it. You have this book in your hands. I'm talking about the freedom lifestyle. Freedom allows your creative brilliance to start a brand or a company. Your job allows you to travel the world or move your office from the beach to a cafe. These are not the angry face Bukowski memes, but the memes that have pictures of laptops in paradise. Collaborate with other homies, go through the hustle and grind together, couch surf if it means you don't need to work for a mean boss. Just follow the dream of freedom. Live and lead life on your terms. Organizations that know that the revolution is real are catching on, as employees are demanding better work from home policies and free dress codes and more time off. Suits and ties? High heels and pin skirts? What sort of creative work do you expect me to get done in that? 2 weeks off a year? 10-hour workday? What kind of energy and motivation do you expect me to have? Less strict dress codes, more holiday leave, and better life conditions are just some of the answers to the demand of us millennials. Success, to us, is not so much about climbing a corporate ladder or having an income that's bigger than our sense of fulfillment or following the cookie-cutter life that was presented to us at school. Success is feeling good in your cells, feeling free. My first few years in entrepreneurship were working with young people to awaken that sense of freedom and success in them. But the last couple of years, I found a success within the revolution of freedom that extends far beyond not being on someone else's clock. Because even though I was living the freedom lifestyle, every night my head hit the pillow, I was drowning in unfulfillment. I wasn't strapped for cash or under anyone else's pressures, but I was over-obligated, over-scheduled, and over-committed. It didn't matter that the outside world saw a girl in her 20s who was earning, giving, crushing, and flying around the world. It didn't matter that she was retiring her mom, leading her cause, creating epic shit, and blowing up on social media. It didn't matter because the people looking in were not there to take the pulse of my soul each night when my head hit the pillow. How much of it was a yes to my soul and a no to obligation? How much of my day was actually my own? My answer was tough to admit. About 30% of my day was a yes to my soul. 70% of my day was a yes to obligation. Ouch. Only minutes of my waking day were my own. Double ouch. 2015 was a year of too many yeses for me, so I told myself that 2016 had to be different. I would like more months in one spot and less months feeling like I had a spare room at the airport. It turned out, with some planning, I would have all of September to November in Phoenix. I was so very excited for these 3 months to honor my commitment to myself in my US home. And then a test came. I received an email in August asking me to speak at an event in September on leadership alongside John Maxwell, which came with the opportunity to also create a legacy leadership program with 10 other millennial leaders. Now, I love and respect John Maxwell so much. So what an opportunity, right? Do you really want to fly again? I was just arriving home from London after a year chock full of travel. I was so looking forward to my 3 months in peace and quiet. My soul was begging me to sit still. Staying at home during this time is what would have me feeling the best when my head hit the pillow each night. But John Maxwell, what an opportunity. Think of the opportunity, the exposure. Shouldn't you jump at it regardless of anything? Cue my soul. Babes, is exposure really your greatest measure of success right now? My soul was standing firm. It might be the measure of success out there, but what about in here? After a week of internal to and fro, I responded to the email. I said no. I felt relieved. Sure, I'd passed quite an opportunity, but not everything is about growing big, getting exposure, and gaining opportunities. Sometimes opportunities are cleverly disguised as distractions. There are a knock on your door, wearing the most beautiful coat, looking just like opportunity when opportunity knocks, but all you really wanted to do that night is stay in and watch Suits. When your alignment with your soul is your measure of success, it's easy to say either a full body yes to an opportunity that keeps you in your alignment, or a no thank you to anything which distracts you from alignment. Even though it may take you 2 weeks to respond with a no thank you email, you know your answer the minute the email comes in. Trust that. Usher in Success 2.0 and its new models that go beyond attainment and accomplishments, and its new ways that go beyond the freedom lifestyle. There is no top. I was climbing the Echo Canyon Trail on Camelback Mountain a few months back, pre-pregnancy. That thing is a beast. It's the type of climb where you wear hiking shoes, you take water and snacks, and you get your frickin' game face on. Going up, I was seeing people stopping one-third of the way up, two-thirds of the way up, at different viewpoints, just to look out over the city. "Let's just stop here," I'd say to my husband. "Now, let's go to the top," he'd say. Naturally, we are climbing to the top. That's what you do when you climb a mountain. You climb until you reach the top. The top, the summit, the peak is always the goal. But I did not really care about getting to the top. We were 45 minutes up, and it would be another 30 minutes to get back down. A little over an hour workout, and even right at the elevation we had reached, the view was amazing. This high up was enough for me. I was so happy to stop here. Why do we always need to get to the top? Hiking puts me in my tap, and I always have epic downloads about my keynotes and work projects when I hike. Isn't this mountain so much like success as we know it? Everything is about getting to the top. I'll meet you at the top. See you at the summit. I'm going straight to the top. Hip hip, rise to the top. It's as though success is something we must ascend, because there is a definitive top and bottom. Well, maybe that was success, but Success 2.0 has no top. Success 2.0 is not a ladder, a line, or a triangle. It's not something vertical. Success 2.0 is round, and it represents your happy, fulfilled, and cycling ecosystem. In the hardcover copy of this book, I have a diagram here about Success 2.0, and I would love if you could draw a circle right here and answer this question. What makes you feel successful when your head hits the pillow each night? Put it in your circle. Where are you chasing success in a model that doesn't fit our generation anymore? More importantly, where are you chasing the kind of success that is making your soul cringe? Are you climbing and clawing your way to the top? Are you two-time marcher with your long-ass days filled with achievements and attainments? Your true success is only measured by the relationship between what you do and what your soul wants you to do. That is success 2.0. So knowing this, take a breath.